Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Hammy, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 536 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden, and this week we start our annual coverage of the Humana Festival of New American Plays, and this year it is the 41st Humana Festival of New American Plays hosted by Actors Theater of Louisville. Now, this year we have a twist, because I am doing a gig around town here in Nashville, which allows me to work professionally on stage with my son, and it's his stage debut and everything, so it was an opportunity too great to pass up. So unfortunately, I was unable to attend this year's festival. But fear not, IDSers. Co-founder of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, T. Quillen, is our man about town. So he went up and did some interviews for me. So his first interview is from the play I Now Pronounce, and he has playwright Tasha Gordon-Salmon and director Stephen Brackett. So we're going to get that conversation just after, you guessed it, these brief messages.
Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet. Yet I ask you to take time
to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play in the gutter, of course.
Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children.
It's time once again for some deep fried theater.
We're rolling, so everything that you say from now on out can and will be used. No, I'm just kidding. So, yes, of course. Listeners, we are here with, I'm going to go very NPR, if that's okay. I'm here with Tasha Gordon-Salmon. Did I pronounce it right?
You did.
Yes. Tasha Gordon-Salmon and Stephen Brackett. No, I'm kidding. Stephen Brackett. I had to. Sorry. I couldn't resist. You guys are, Tasha was the playwright.
Correct.
And Stephen was the director of I Now Pronounce.
True.
But I'm gonna let you guys just kind of talk about how you guys can fight over it if you want to, whatever. Talk about the plot. Give me a little some brief overview of plot synopsis if you want. Whoever wants to do that. Ready?
Tasha wants to do it.
Okay, good.
I love nothing more than summarizing things that have taken me 100 pages.
Of course, right?
Yeah. To write.
I mean, I could read the thing that's here, but it's so unimpersonal.
Also, you can test me.
Yeah.
Chime in. But the play is about a wedding. And a tragic event takes place at the very beginning of the wedding, and the play basically takes place over the course of this one night, and all the characters are sort of grappling with this. It's in the press materials, right? With the death that happened.
Yeah.
In a funny way.
You know what? That's actually probably the best, most succinct plot synopsis of the thing. Really, it is. I have to say, this was the first play that I saw from the festival,
mm-hmm.
and it was a really wonderful way to start.
Oh, good!
Really
Thank
wonderful because it was. It's interesting because I don't
want
to say it was lighthearted, even though it was.
Yeah.
Interesting piece. I mean, really, really, really interesting. Let me start with this question first of all. Where did the idea come from? Which is, I know that's a cliched question, but you know, humor me.
Yeah. I think the structure and the sort of convention of a wedding was interesting to me.
Sure.
I think there was a lot of sort of fun comedic opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I think the play also is sort of asking this bigger question about human connection and relationships, and be sort of like fitting into sort of the structure, the system that perhaps we're taught to fit into. And so I think a wedding was sort of a great metaphor for that. It's sort of this ritual, it's this rite of passage we go through. It historically has these very specific gender roles attached. So I was sort of excited about taking that and then sort of breaking it down.
Right.
And then also I was at a wedding once and I was very bored. And the officiant was on the older side and I started to imagine things.
So you wrote the play at the wedding.
I didn't write the whole play at the wedding.
No, that would have been a great story. You should have just said
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I went into the bathroom. I got this toilet paper.
And when I came out of the bathroom, I had this play.
Yeah. Oh, was that?
wrote it on toilet paper.
Quoted Death of a Salesman, I don't remember. When I came out of the forest, by God, I was rich.
Right.
Yeah, that was sort of, but I think sort of the idea of that event at the very beginning
right.
sort of was percolating a little bit.
Okay.
And I also think that this play plays with duration a little in terms of comedy.
Yeah.
And it felt like a long ceremony. And I was like, how long could you make people sit there? And like, what would happen if this kept taking weird turns?
Yeah.
So I think that sort of first monologue I wrote all in one shot, which is the play starts with a pretty long monologue.
Yeah. Which was wonderful, by the way, because, you know, I kind of knew what the play was about, you know, just from the synopsis of reading and everything. But the way that the synopsis is written, which was wonderful, it says that a tragic event happens. Mm. And so this is a little bit of a spoiler for listeners. No, it's not, because it closes today. So it's not a spoiler. That's dumb. I didn't realize that. That was going to be the tragic event. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And so I'm sitting here watching it going, oh, that's funny. I shouldn't be laughing at that. That's not funny.
Yeah.
That's not funny at all. That's someone needs to call someone. You know, that feeling?
Yeah.
Which was really wonderful. And just the way that it was handled from the way that the text handled it, the way that the actors and the mm-hmm. situation handled it was wonderful. So I have a question.
Yeah.
And this is something that I direct as well. The pool of light that he was standing in, I couldn't tell whether I was having a stroke or not either. But did it start sort of with a soft focus on
yeah.
and then go to a very sharp, hard edge? But
yeah,
that was beautiful. Because I caught it about halfway through, and I was like, is that what's happening? Are we bringing everything into a sharper, clearer focus as he's falling out of?
Yeah.
Wow. You know,
Tasha has this really exquisite stage direction before the monologue in a way that, like, I wish it could be printed in the program or,
sure.
you know, like, but it's this lengthy stage direction about the rabbi standing in a spotlight and kind of pointing towards his being alone in that spotlight. And there's sort of kind of a beautiful, soft existentialism in that stage direction. And so it was really important to me to figure out a way to subtly sort of hint at that through the course of that monologue. And we were gifted with an incredible actor playing the rabbi who has a great sense of humor and really reaches out to the audience.
Yeah.
And so in some ways I felt like I needed to kind of strong arm a couple of more drastic visual cues underneath his very palpable, wonderful performance.
Yeah.
So the kind of tension between his liveness and his approachability and the slightly more severe tech underneath him, I think came close to representing the stage direction that Tasha provided us with.
Oh, wow.
But I was hoping that spotlight kind of slowly narrowing into a tighter focus also just helped the audience lean in a different way to understand that there was something happening underneath the text of this old man forgetting the name of the groom and getting lost
multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times.
Yeah.
And getting lost, right? That it's sort of, I hope, pulls the audience into thinking about what you talked about, which is there's something else happening.
Yeah. And so, I mean, visually, I mean, you did the same, and I don't want to harp on this monologue because we've got a whole play to talk about, but it does. It kind of creates the entire the disjointedness mm-hmm. that everybody winds up feeling throughout mm-hmm. the entire play. The fact that breaking the convention of with the spotlight is there, and it, you know, theatrical convention tells you that the actor is supposed to stay in their light, mm-hmm. and he goes out of the light a lot, in and out of the light all the time. And the interesting thing that I thought, which actually is one of those moments where I went, oh, he walked out of the light. He walked away from the light to pass. Mm. I thought that was a wonderful way to handle that. I was like, of course that's what's going to happen because cool. Everything's broken.
Yeah.
Everything's broken.
Cool. It was wonderful. We tried 80 different versions of that romance.
Yeah, I can see that.
That was probably the thing that we teched the most in our very short tech time.
Yeah.
But we tried multiple different iterations. He rode the first stab. He rode a trap down, and so there was like this big ominous grave. Yeah. And that had its own flaws. Yeah. But I think we arrived at something that I'm proud of.
Yeah, no, you should be.
Has a delicacy to it that I'm excited about.
Yeah, no, you should be. I loved the honest simplicity of it because it was one actor and one light and. It was just an honest, shared moment with all of us. Beautiful. Beautifully handled. Thanks. Yeah, beautifully Thanks. Handled. And the entire script itself, such believable and relatable characters. Wonderful story. I'm gushing now. Okay, I'll stop.
You can keep. We got time.
I know. I know, right? Okay.
My flight doesn't leave until tomorrow.
We're good with
you guys. Yeah, okay, all right. So let's talk a little bit about the process then. Because this is one of the things that I've asked pretty much everybody who's come in and sat down with me this morning. Talk to me about your process with your actors. What am I trying to ask? Were these actors that you had cast and then brought in, or talk to me about the process?
Yeah, no, this is actors that we cast in New York. Mm-hmm. The festival hired casting directors that I love and mm-hmm. have worked with multiple times before Caleri casting, and so. Tasha and I made up a list of actors that we wanted to see, and then Caleri brought in a whole bunch of people, and we really found this cast through that casting process. Only one actor, right, in the show
had
done any sort of reading. So it was a pretty fresh batch of people to this project. That was exciting for us.
Oh, that's good. It felt like a tight ensemble.
Yeah.
It really did. It felt like most audiences would take it for granted, I guess, to a certain extent. But I mean, as someone who's been in theater and done it, you can sense it, you can feel it.
Yeah.
That felt like a tight group.
I think that's a testament to sort of the type of play that Tasha wrote mm-hmm. and the fact that this really ultimately is an ensemble piece, right? That there's nobody who you walk away from saying, that was the protagonist of this story,
yes.
right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that Tasha gave every character something really meaty to sort of handle and grapple with. And I think when you do that and when you divvy out the experience of the play over an ensemble and do a good job doing that, you get really good work from your actors.
Yeah.
And so I think everybody was really excited to tell their own specific stories through the course of this. So, it was a nice ensemble building project.
Yeah. There's so many questions. Were there any one particular character? This can get a very personal question. So if you kind of go, I object, I plead the fifth, whatever. You can choose not to answer this question. A lot of times playwrights tend to write themselves into their plays.
Yeah.
Is there any one particular character that you tend to identify with?
It's really funny because I do feel like there are pieces of me in all the characters.
Sure,
and I think I start from a place of like there is some social commentary there. These are slightly heightened characters,
right?
But, there are things like, the first act of play, I was like, the bride and groom are terrible. And I was like, there's some of me in them now. I do think there are pieces of me in all the characters. And I do think, there's the Michelle character who has this hope. And there's a Dave character who's very cynical. And I think I have both of those. Why are you laughing at me?
Because I was expecting
I
you
do
to
have
say
a soft spot for Dave. I do, which confuses people.
So, he's the...
what words can we say on this podcast?
Anything.
He's the one that says the bad words.
Okay, so the bartender.
Sorry, we've been working with child actors, so I just called them the bad words.
That's awesome.
I think there's a big part of me and that sort of the impetus for this play.
Yeah.
Are these real questions that he has, which is like, why are we still doing this thing? Right? Because everybody tells you to do this thing.
Yeah.
And like it's based on these really ancient gender roles and like, why are you doing this thing? And I think that was my way into the play.
Sure.
And it's funny because I think in early drafts or even people reading the play were like, is this character likeable? You know, like this character is so difficult. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, it's funny. But audiences really like him.
Yeah, no, I think he's that character that says what we're all thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and all of the stuff that we want to just say, but you know, again, you know.
Yeah, it's,
we don't want to go to jail, so we
and
can't
say. And also Jason, the actor, also has brought, like, so much sort of, like, joy to the character. That there's cynicism, but there's also some, like, joy in that cynicism.
Yeah. It's an interesting moment for marriage in our country, right? And
yeah.
I think that's one of the delights of this play, right?
Yeah.
Is that I feel like we are, in a beautiful way, redefining our relationship to marriage.
Yeah.
But there's also a really big... I feel like conversation about challenging the validity of marriage and what it ultimately means and the agreement and the kind of contract of it, right? And I think that people are sort of hungry for Dave to punch holes in the institution of marriage, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that is a bigger conversation that I feel like more and more people are having.
Yeah, sure.
So I feel like the audience is really like
wanting
that when he tears into it, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a really important part of this play and an important part of Tasha's take on the play, right?
Yeah.
That it balances out some idealistic hope, right?
Yeah.
Punctuated with a couple that were like, should these people really be getting married? Do they, do they love each other, right? And then the complete other side of it with Dave just saying, I think that this entire thing is bullshit.
Yeah. No, it's very true. So, okay, now I have another loaded question. Talk to me about the usage of the flower girls as a Greek chorus. I mean, am I fairly close with that? I mean, that's what it felt like to me because they would come in and provide sort of commentary in the way that only children can do. But because they worked as a unit, they felt sort of Greek chorus.
Yeah, and their names are Flower Girls 1, 2, and 3 in the script.
Right. Okay, nice.
Which is very adorable seeing those little kids of the first three being like, I'm Flower Girl 2.
That's so cute.
Yeah, I think there's something about, if we're sort of looking at this institution of marriage and then in a deeper way, sort of human connection or relationships, that there's something about like defamiliarizing that idea through these flower girls that like they're learning, seeing a lot of this for the first time, or their ways of dealing with the world seem so crazy or they're so traumatized. But sort of if you step back, it's like, oh, this is a crazy traumatizing thing.
Right.
So I think that lens was interesting to me.
Yeah. Oh no, I couldn't help but think of the metaphoric image of, and this is another sort of spoiler, whatever, the metaphoric image of when, and forgive me for not knowing the characters' names, the two who wind up going off and having the tryst.
Oh, Seth and Eva.
Yeah, so Seth and Eva, when they go in there and have their tryst in the where the ceremony took place, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you realize that the three flower girls witnessed the entire thing.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of was, oh my God, the flower girls were deflowered.
You know what I'm saying?
And I was
totally.
Oh my God, that's such a...
When you think about the things that these girls have seen over the course of the evening, they saw an old man die.
Yeah.
They felt like they summoned the ghost of Bloody Mary.
Right.
They felt like they saw her appear.
Right.
Then they felt like they saw dead people on the ground.
Right.
Like the ghost was killing all these people.
Right.
And then they see two overly emotional people having what we can only imagine as pretty intense emotionally laden sex.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so these girls have seen a lot by
right.
the end of the play. Right. and I feel like they're really sort of the lens that we get to express the magnitude of what happened over the course of this evening. Of course, everybody is dealing with the death of the rabbi,
right?
But their children just screaming about it, right?
And yet, and they don't lock down because of it. Mm-hmm. They process it,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right then,
yep,
right,
totally
by singing, totally. Beautiful, gorgeous. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just beautiful. This whole thing was just wonderful.
Cool.
The song was incredibly. Hilarious, by the way. Ironic and funny and silly, but yeah, I mean, you left. You knew that they were going to be fine. You know what I'm saying? They weren't scarred for life for having, as you just said, witnessed all of this stuff that they, from their point of view, were just a series of horrific events, and they feel like that they might have even had a hand in, you know, accidentally on purpose. But yeah, you feel like that because they then just dealt with it and processed it right then that they're, you know, emotionally and mentally going to be okay. So, yes, really well. It was handled wonderfully, by the way. And those three little girls, oh my God.
Amazing.
Adorable.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
Just adorable.
Yeah, amazing.
Cool. So what's next for both of you? What do you have coming up next? Are you guys a team now? You just do everything from now forever?
We're married.
Yeah. That's how it works, right?
Yeah, I think so, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we both go back to New York and continue working on other projects. I have a show that's running in New York right now. So
plug it.
I directed Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief.
Oh, cool.
An adaptation of the young adult novel.
And where is it running?
It's playing at the Lortel Theater.
Okay.
It's a great new musical. So.
Is there contact information or plug it? I mean, seriously,
No, it's called The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical. If you Google it, you'll get all the information.
Sweet, awesome.
But it's running for the remainder of the month at the Lortel in New York.
Cool.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm really excited to see it.
It's awesome. Fun. It's really, really fun.
And I go back, I have some deadlines, I'm working on some new plays, I'm working on a musical.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really, I was able to be here for the whole rehearsal process, which is really lovely. So now it's like getting back to like, sitting at my computer and writing the next thing.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Now, okay, did I see in the lobby that this was your first full-length production?
It was.
Wow. Okay, so I shouldn't, yeah, I got time. We have a minute and a half. Tell me about that. No, I'm kidding. We have more than that.
Okay.
What was that like? What was that process like for this, your first one?
Really wonderful. I think, you know, I've been doing this for a little bit, so I've had a bunch of readings of plays.
Sure.
I had a 10-minute play here last year.
Mm-hmm.
I've written a bunch of 10-minute plays, but it was very exciting to finally work on a full-length production.
Yeah, of course.
Wonderful to work with Stephen. And I learned a lot. Like, I think that I just, you know, there's something from bringing it to the page, to the stage, and the rehearsal process.
Sure.
And I learned a lot about the play. I think that was really exciting because I feel like this is a play I've worked on for a little bit. I had a workshop at Perry Mansfield with the theater in the summer. And so it was really exciting to sort of see that final stage.
Cool. How much did it evolve as you went? I mean, from what you originally brought to Actors Theater to what was on stage, how much did it evolve?
I would say the shape of the play is really there.
Okay.
It was really there, but I would say internally there were some changes. In the summer, in the workshop I worked on, sort of a lot of those bride and groom scenes, just sort of like finessing them and sort of digging into what that's really about.
Yeah.
That three women scene at the end was a newer scene. Sort of where it gets to, sort of like that there are these three female friends in the play and it felt important to have like a real moment with them. There's sort of a three flower girls scene and then there's a three women scene.
Yeah, I love that parallel, by the way. It was gorgeous.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
And it's been really dreamy to work here.
Yeah.
It
is wonderful here.
I mean, it's really supported.
I mean, coming in and doing this, having done this for, you know, a couple of years, and I mean, you know, I've not worked on that end of the spectrum, but it's just you can feel the vibe of it. It's just wonderful.
It's a bunch of people who understand new play development.
Yeah.
And it has really felt like they've provided a foundation for us really to get into the play, figure out what we needed to figure out with the play, and they've been supportive through every step of that.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, we can't speak highly enough of
That's awesome.
Actors Theater.
And I'll say also, we had a cast who also worked on tons of new plays, who were very generous. Like, it felt like the theater, the cast, like it genuinely felt like a really wonderful, when like all the ingredients are right. And everybody was just so supportive as I feel like I was figuring things out.
Yeah. Okay, last little bit, and this is the last little bit of gushing I'm going to do. The scene between the husband and wife, the bride and the groom, excuse me, with the exchange that they had about, what is it, it's the 1950s, it is when I want it to be. That whole exchange, I felt like at some points I was the only one laughing in the theater, which is fine. I don't mind being the only one laughing in the theater, but I literally was guffawing, making an ass of myself in the theater, because I've had that exact same conversation.
I've never had that conversation.
Oh, it's fine. My God,
I know
it's
what
funny.
You're talking about.
It's right, exactly, right? That's saying what? No, I have had that exact same conversation, and it almost went exactly that exact same way.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was just like, oh, yeah, life, got it.
And I feel like there's this question in the play a little bit, which is like this romantic idea of like romantic love.
Right.
But it's also like we're in a contemporary world where we're allegedly supposed to be treated equally now.
Right.
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 And so it's like wanting to have your independence. But then also be like, wait, but you're supposed to take care of me. But don't tell me what to do.
Right.
And like, how do we and like, I've been taught these things that suddenly I'm supposed to fall into, but I don't want to be in those things.
Right.
So I feel like navigating that was something I was sort of interested in the play. So I feel like in some ways it also gets at that question of like, we want to do this, but not in any of the ways people did it. And it's tricky.
But yeah, we want it to be exactly like that, but not. We wanted to do it our own way, but we wanted to look exactly like that.
And also these are characters who are, you know, flawed characters.
Sure.
And there's also that thing in a relationship, which is the I want it my way. So
right. Right.
Whatever rationalization gets us there is the right way.
I have no idea. Okay, cool. Thank you guys for sitting in.
Thanks for having us. It's great meeting you guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
If you love The Inexplicable Dumb Show as much as I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
So that is it for episode 536. I'd like to, of course, once again, thank the IDS's man about town, T. Quillen, for stepping in and helping out when there was a need. And, of course, I want to thank our guests, playwright Tasha Gordon-Zalman and director Stephen Brackett from the play I Now Pronounce. So next week, we are going to interview, or T, rather, is going to interview Eric Hoff, who is a director and direct the mini discs of Nathan Stubblefield, which was the Apprentice Showcase. So we're going to get all that fun stuff next week. Hey, do you want to be part of the Dumb Show? Then please do so by calling the voicemail line at 615-866-1282 or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com, or follow the show on Twitter @inexplicableds, @ inexplicable, D, S. Find out our latest comings and goings and whatnot for the show via our Twitter feed. So until next week, this is John Malden saying, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality WAV files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at magnatune.com. That's MAGNATUNE. Magnitude. We are not evil.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. no ease. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.